With everyone fighting for attention, how can your business stand out and connect with customers? Easy, with Constant Contact. Constant Contact's award-winning marketplace platform has helped millions of small businesses stand out, stay top of mind, and see big results fast. It's okay if you don't know much about marketing. Constant Contact's writing assistant tools and automation features help you craft messaging and say the right things at the right time. I use this to help write and send my email newsletters, and you should too. So get going and start growing your business today with a free trial at ConstantContact.com. Just go to ConstantContact.com right now. Constant Contact, helping the small stand tall. ConstantContact.com.
Blue Wire.
First pick in the 1991 NBA draft, the Charlotte Hornets select Larry Johnson from University.
I'm not supposed to be here, man. A lot of people from where I'm from, so don't make it.
Charlotte, we're back.
All right. Welcome in to another live edition of Buzz Beat, a Charlotte Hornets podcast. This is Richie, and we are here again on Twitter Spaces to recap this surprising win over the Hawks. And as always, we will take any requests for speakers. I am joined by Brian today. BG, are you able to wake up like JT Thor and just decide to be left-handed? Did you hear that little comment?
Yeah. I did. And Eric and Dell's reaction, I think it was Ashley Chamedy who provided that story coming in from a break during the game. And yeah, it was amazing. He just sort of like wakes up, brushes his teeth
left-handed,
right?
And
sees which way he's like feeling that day. No, it is one of those other reminders that just like NBA athletes are special and they're built sort of differently in more ways than when we probably even realize just watching them do their thing playing basketball.
All right, we're going to get into this because there's obviously big news that is related to this game. Before the game, I guess on Saturday, we got the news that four players, Ball, Rozier, McDaniels, Plumlee, have entered health and safety protocols here. And I actually thought that this was kind of where most of our conversation was going to lie. But because the game was so exciting to watch, even if they didn't win the game, it was not an ugly game. I thought for sure the offense was going to be hard to come by at points because they lost so much with Ball and with Rozier. So I don't think we have anything definitive in terms of, I guess, when they can return. I think as we get closer and we hear more news, like I guess we won't hear anything definitive until it actually is imminent. BG, what was your initial reaction to this news as it broke over the week? And I know it was probably mostly negative, but was there any kind of silver lining that you had? I mean, let us know.
Yeah, I mean, well, first off, as I'm sure everyone else thought, you hope everyone's okay. You know, you hope they're vaccinated, so whatever, you know, possible symptoms they could have won't be as bad. And then that would also probably help them get back out on the court quicker, just given the league's protocols. But yeah, it's going to be at least 10 days, right? For LaMelo and Rozier. I think that was at least the initial, I'll double check on that. But, you know, the only silver lining I thought was you get to maybe see some James Bouknight and some JT Thor, and or perhaps even Kai Jones as well. Or in we saw JT and James Bouknight play tonight. Not the most encouraging of outings for James Bouknight. JT Thor at least playable defensively in some of those minutes where you would maybe see Jalen McDaniels, right, as like a stretchy athletic defensive four. And then you also, the other thought was, well, you'll get to see more of Miles Bridges on the basketball. And I think, you know, him getting more reps playmaking, and we saw it tonight there, there were a couple of different ways. They chose to sort of like feature Miles as a downhill driver and really using a lot of him as the back screener in Spain pick and roll to then scramble the defense around, mess with the matchups a little bit, and then let Miles sort of go to work in the middle of the court, which is something they started doing late last season. I really like it as a look for Miles. But No real good news to pluck out of what came on Saturday, because it's some really important players. It's LaMelo Ball, it's Terry Rozier, Jalen McDaniels, who's arguably their best perimeter defender, Mason Plumlee, who, we've discussed the pros and cons of Plumlee a ton already this season, but he's at least a big body and lets you, unlocks some of your pick and roll defenses and some of your spread pick and roll actions on offense. And I mean, the Hornets are going to be faced with Joel Embiid Monday night. So, and Wednesday, those are games you'd really like to have Plumlee active for, but I'm sure we'll see more Nick Richards, maybe some Vernon Carey Jr. for those games, because sort of a lot to ask PJ to do with that. You just want to make sure everyone's okay. The bits of news that came after the initial break were scary, just sort of like people realizing that it was going to – people getting sent home from the practice facility. You sort of worry that, this is going to leap up and touch way more than just two or three guys. So Charlotte plays without four players tonight. And it just seems like it has been a bit of a whirlwind of the last, 24 or 36 hours for the Hornets, just to – move on from that and somehow get ready to play a road game against a very good team tonight. So, I just hope everyone's okay and it can sort of like get healthy and get back on the court as quickly as possible.
Yeah, I thought the timing felt very unfortunate for this team, because the Hornets just had like 3 or 4 days off to rest up. You get Cody Martin returning after he missed back-to-back games, and the Hornets are playing some decent teams here. So instead of having this like renewed energy and stamina, it kind of was negated with these four players who not only contribute on the court, but they also contribute with their minutes production. And I tweeted this out. It reminded me a little of last year, where the injuries started to pile up with Hayward and Ball, and the depth is going to be tested this year. Last year, it did not hold up. The Hornets were just so dependent on their top 2 to 4 players, and if any combination of those guys are out, there's huge, huge holes to fill. I personally didn't think that the depth was going to turn out the way that it did tonight. Ish Smith stepped up. Kelly Oubre played well. You're going to need almost every single player that touches the court to have some kind of positive impact, and I think for the most part, anyone that did, maybe outside of Bouknight, like you mentioned, had a positive impact on this game. So, yeah, not much of a silver lining. I think that people that are wanting Bouknight to play a little bit more, I'm sure they would rather him play with, LaMelo and Plumlee and players like that, who are going to, maybe accentuate some of his skills, and he's not having to come in and try to pick up any kind of slack. So it's definitely not a true representation of how maybe he could potentially play with this team, because he's playing as a player that's trying to pick up some slack. But I think he's better suited to play consistent minutes in Greensboro right now and just have that consistent court time. So let's talk about this game specifically. 130-127 offense definitely was not hard to come by from either team. We can almost start with any player, any type of trend here. But I do want to start with Kelly Oubre, because I think for this team to be somewhat competitive over these next handful of games with these players out, he is a guy that I'm kind of looking at to see be consistent. And he's a guy that has not been consistent this year. He's very up and down. He's filling in for Rozier as that floor spacer, which I guess I don't think I'd hear myself say that when the season started. And he had 9 early points in this first quarter with 3 3-pointers. One was on this set that you and I both highlighted on Twitter. It's a set that I really love, with their Spain pick and roll, where Rozier is typically used as the back screener, and there's the threat of like Miles Bridges for the lob. So you've got people kind of sagging down, and then Oubre just sets the back screen, fades out to the 3-point line, makes it there in the first quarter. He had a huge 3-pointer midway through the fourth quarter, and he had a 4-point play that he should have had. He didn't convert. So appropriate, because he's a guy that, and if any player on this roster, I thought, okay, who's going to have a 4-point play? It would definitely be Kelly Oubre. He just has all the weird plays throughout the game. He's still a streaky player, Brian, but I think he, Miles, and Hayward have got to be like the guys on the wing to have these solid games and these next handful of games to give this team a chance with these four missing players.
Yeah, they've used Kelly a fair amount as like the back screen guy in that Spain pick and roll this year. I think that's been a pretty good action for Oubre. and in a good action for Charlotte so far this year. And yeah, Kelly, just, you know, there's been a couple times this season he is up and down. I don't think the defense has been sort of like what Charlotte was, you know, aiming for this season or hoping for, whether that was, mm-hmm. you know, misguided or not. But man, you know, he's had a couple of these just monster scoring performances that have swung some big road games. The Memphis game, you know, a week or two ago, where Kelly goes for what, 37 off the bench, 28 tonight. Hits 6 of 10 3-pointers. Charlotte's still minus 16. The 39 minutes with Oubre on the court, wow, which is just,
I wouldn't have guessed that.
Hilarious. Yeah. Pretty amazing, actually, to think about that. But he goes 6 of 10 on threes, lots of, like, you know, juicy sort of like catch and shoot looks. He had a big one coming down on the right wing in transition to, I think, give Charlotte the lead, like midway or late in the fourth quarter. You could hear him calling for it as he was flying up the court, trailing the action. He's just a big time confidence, you know, player and shooter. And I think he sort of like led the charge for the Hornets from deep tonight. He goes 17 of 37 from deep, 46%. It's a lot of volume. And obviously the efficiency, probably like a, you know, like an outlier, yeah. Good shooting performance from the Hornets, especially considering that they got 2 of 4 shooting on threes from Ish Smith, and 3 of 6 from Cody Martin. Miles Bridges, big shooting night from deep. He was awesome tonight, 32 points, 11 of 15, and 6 of 6 from the line, 4 of 6 from deep. But I do want to, I looked this up during the game and heading into tonight, and it will certainly go up after his performance against Atlanta. Kelly Oubre this season on spot up possessions, 66% effective shooting, 1.29 points per possession. He entered tonight number 2 in the NBA among players with at least 100 spot up possessions. He ranks 2nd in that group in spot up efficiency behind only Grayson Allen for the Bucks, and he also ranks 2nd in the NBA in spot up points per game, 6.8. Just behind Grayson Allen at 6.9. So, you know, Kelly has at least found, even if the defense is not necessarily what you want it to be, you know, I think the spot up offense is something, the movement to some degree, some slight movement shooting. I think it's like Kelly has found that role, is comfortable with it.
If you're a basketball junkie, then you know there's no better time of year than the NBA playoffs. Twice a week, JJ Redick is cooking on his podcast, The Old Man and the Three. He has guys come on in all stages of their careers to talk about the league and share stories you won't hear anywhere else, including Devin Booker on why he talks so much trash, Ray Allen's epic free throw competitions with LeBron in Miami, and the moment Tyrese Halliburton knew Pascal Siakam would be a good fit in Indy. In addition to player interviews, every Monday, JJ breaks down the top 3 things happening around the NBA with unmatched analysis, not outlandish takes, and is often joined by masterminds of the game like Tim Legler to dive deep on rookie reports, trade breakdowns, and why is mean mugging now a tech? You won't find another outlet that covers the game as comprehensively and with such insight as JJ does it on The Old Man and the Three. Make this your companion podcast during the playoffs. Listen to The Old Man and the Three ad-free on Wondery Plus or wherever you get your podcasts.
Whether you're a world-class athlete or a podcaster like me, we all understand the importance of mental and physical well-being and proper recovery for top-notch performance. That's why I'm excited that Unified Healing is sponsoring podcasts on the Blue Wire Network. Unified Healing is a new and super innovative global network of wellness centers powered by Energy Enhancement System, or EE System. If you haven't heard of the EE System yet, then you'll want to listen up. This technology promotes wellness, deep relaxation, purification, and rejuvenation. Wherever you are across the globe, access to a center is easy and affordable. Interested in experiencing the EE System technology for yourself? Go to unifiedhealing.com/bluewire to learn more and find a center near you. That's unified, UNIFYD, healing.com/bluewire. No material or testimonials on the Unified Healing website are intended to be viewed as medical advice or a substitute for professional medical advice, diagnosis, or treatment. Always seek the advice of your physician or other qualified healthcare provider with any questions you may have regarding a medical condition or treatment and before undertaking a new healthcare regimen, including EE system.
The guy I'd like to highlight real quickly because we really could talk about everyone in the rotation tonight, but this was just an awesome PJ Washington game and super impressed with his performance, plus 17 in 38 minutes. And just, you could see the two-way versatility of PJ, like on full display, like being able to drag Clint Capella away from the cup and on offense and opening up the floor. Like, PJ didn't have a great shooting night, only 1 of 4 from deep, although he did have a big time cut dunk late in the game that helped seal the win. But just bringing Capella away from the hoop, you know, that opens everything up for Miles Bridges, and those guys had big nights. Cody Martin getting downhill, getting to the rim, and then defensively, just PJ had a great block at one point in this game. Looked like he may have actually gotten away with the goaltend on the play, but a great block, a couple other really, really nice contests, and his ability to switch out onto Trae Young, I think that was huge. Like, when it comes down to Atlanta, and to be clear, the Hawks are missing a bunch of guys right now as well, but so much of their stuff is Trae Young pick and roll, right? And he just, Trae Young problem solving on the fly, the decision-making, the pull-up shooting, and him being able to, like, turn the corner, right, and get downhill. Like, regardless of whatever coverage you throw at him, unless you're trapping him, the thought is Trae should be able to just roast it, right? You drop, he's going to get downhill. You play the level, he's going to get downhill. You switch, he can isolate or reject. Like, there's different stuff he can do. And I just thought PJ did a wonderful job switching onto him and then hanging tough and staying in front of him. And on the backside of that too, because you could really see Atlanta try to then pick on Ish Smith when he would switch onto, you know, John Collins or Gallinari, who I thought was the matchup issue for Charlotte all night. And Atlanta definitely found some points doing that. But I even thought late in the game, when they really, like, had to have some stops, I thought Charlotte did a nice job either getting, you know, kicking out Ish from those plays and getting him to more favorable matchups, or Ish really just, like, battled with guys that are a lot bigger than he is. But Richie, what did you think of PJ's performance tonight?
Well, it's funny because Nick Richard was the ceremonial starter here, playing 7-8 minutes, which I think, you know, is needed. You need that body, just another center. And PJ Washington, like you mentioned, you're probably the highest out of anyone on the podcast on PJ. Not that I'm low by any means, but the versatility that this guy does bring is awesome. And I think offensively, that's where you see his potential unlocked the most, with the way that this team can play. And I think one of the things with, you know, obviously LaMelo out and Plumlee out, this team is going to have to make up for some kind of replication of playmaking. And even if it's not PJ himself that is playmaking, he gives the room and the space for others to play. And I think Borrego has developed those good habits with everyone in terms of just passing the ball, being unselfish. And when he's in there versus maybe Nick Richards, it gives Cody Martin the ability to drive and kick. It gives these other players the ability to drive and kick because of PJ Washington's spacing. And he's done a really good job rebounding the ball as well, which is obviously something that needs to be replicated with Plumlee and LaMelo out. We do have a speaker request under construction. Thoughts, comments?
Yeah, I'm joining in a little late, so forgive me if this has already been discussed, but I just kind of want to discuss who I think is the unsung hero tonight, which is Ish Smith. I thought he ran the fourth quarter offense almost to perfection, man. The offense was just steady. It looked like he could be trusted. He threw a beautiful hockey assist to Cody Martin, who then dished it off to PJ. And it just kind of makes me wonder why he fell out the rotation in the first place. But I think Ish Smith is going to be huge, you know, while LaMelo and Terry is out, because we definitely need a guy like that to be reliable in the offense. One more point I want to make is, as far as defending Trae Young in this pick-and-roll offense, I thought P.J. Washington was also big time. It's not going to really show up in the stat sheet, but, you know, Nick Richards, he looked lost a lot trying to defend that pick-and-roll. And that also put Ish Smith in some bad situations, like you guys mentioned. And I just thought the game changed when P.J. Washington was in the game, because you guys know when centers defend this pick-and-roll, 90% of defending the right is just knowing where to be. And PJ did that effectively. I thought he also did a good job of keeping Clint Capela relatively quiet. Now, he did have 14 rebounds, but I don't think, you know, it was as impactful as it could have been. So I just kind of want to know your thoughts on that as well.
Well, I'll go back to the Ish Smith point. I'm with you. I didn't really understand immediately why he was taken out of the rotation, because it was kind of like this all or nothing thing. Like, it just was so instant the way that he was taken out of the rotation. I think the Hornets played the best tonight when they were pushing the pace, and that's nothing new. But when you are lacking players that can play make in the half court like LaMelo, you need to get Atlanta in some situations where they're at a disadvantage, and Ish Smith can do that with the way that he's pushing the pace and getting to the bucket. He had his three-point shot working tonight, which is probably something. And yeah, go ahead.
I don't think we saw that coming. No. I don't think we saw the 3 points.
Definitely not. No, definitely not.
And that's probably not going to happen tomorrow night against the Sixers, but we'll take it. We'll take it. And to everyone's point here that we've talked about defending the pick and roll with a team like Atlanta, where they just are so heavy with the pick and roll. One thing that I noticed, and I guess I don't know why we haven't mentioned him yet, but Hornets like switched almost everything, Brian, with the pick and roll. It feels like they just did it automatically. And I think one player that's so good with, whether he's defending the ball or whether he's having to switch on a big, is Cody Martin. I think he was probably the best player for Charlotte in this first three quarters. Like, his two-way impact was just so evident. And I don't think JB cared who he was defending. They'd place him on Trey, but immediately when they set that screen, he'd be guarding Gallo or anyone down in the post. And he was so good in defending and affecting shots. Even early when he had two fouls, he was still able to defend with that aggression and do so without fouling and forcing the miss. There were plays like that every quarter with Cody Martin. He cooled off in the fourth quarter, but defensively, from quarter one to quarter four, Cody Martin was the best player for Charlotte.
He had a couple switches or sort of like scramble pickups onto Gallinari. And, you know, Gallinari got his on those a couple of times. But, you know, what are you going to do? Gallo's a great player. He's huge and he makes really tough shots. For the most part, Cody, he battled his ass off tonight. He had a really, really nice play early in the second quarter. I think he was switched into the post on John Collins. It may have been Gallinari. I think it was Collins. Or it could have even been Capela. And by the way, Clint Capela, zero blocks tonight, as far as maybe PJ pulling him away from the paint a little bit. But Cody Martin's fronting the post. I think Trey Young tries to throw, or maybe it was one of Atlanta's guards. They try to throw a lob entry pass over the top. And Cody, like, times it and gets just a piece of it. Deflection, they push in transition. Cody has the ball. He pushes with his own dribble. And
boxes out, basically.
goes right to Miles Bridges and does like a little DHO. Bridges hits a three. Cody, is the one that sets it up and then essentially screens for Miles on the play too. And it was just an awesome two-way play from Cody Martin. A career high, 19 points tonight. Hit some big free throws down the stretch. Two steals, four assists. He and Bridges really like stuffed the stat sheet tonight. Both those guys combined 10 and 10 from the line. Those guys also 7 of 12 on threes. Bridges, 4 assists, 3 steals, a block. Yeah, Miles was awesome. This is one of those games. I think Bridges has had, some tough shooting nights perhaps in the last week or so, but he really got it going this game. Obviously, he had a couple pretty tough three-pointers, but just getting downhill, I thought, for him was big this game. And when Miles is able to pressure the rim, I think that's probably necessary for Charlotte right now, just because LaMelo isn't playing. And Ish definitely gives you some of that, which I'm glad Under Construction highlighted, because that is what Ish Smith does, man. He gets north-south in the half court, and he can really open some stuff up. 7 assists for Ish tonight. But Bridges, with his size and athleticism, that's a huge, huge, huge part of Charlotte's offense. And I think something the Hornets really like are going to have to lean into without Rozier, without LaMelo on offense specifically, and without Mason Plumlee to an extent on offense as well, is they've done so much just like spread pick and roll this year with LaMelo, empty corner pick and roll. And for now, at least for the next couple of games, like you can still do plenty of that with Ish Smith. You can do some of that with Cody Martin, I suppose. Gordon Hayward certainly as well. But I think what you really need to be able to lean into is using the combination of Bridges, Washington, and Hayward, and I guess Oubre as well, as much as you can highlight those guys as screeners as possible. Because I think like your best way towards creating half court advantage is using those guys to screen and then threaten as, you know, 3-point shooters on a pop, slipping to the basket, rolling hard, like whatever it is. But like that's really where you've got to like lean into offensively, is using those guys to force defenses to switch, for the defenses to rotate. Like that's how you create advantage. I think the next couple of games in the half court is really, really dialing those guys up. They all played huge minutes tonight. PJ 38 minutes, Bridges 40 minutes, Kelly Oubre 39 minutes, Hayward 33. So those guys all played a lot, obviously, on the first night of a back to back. But an impressive performance by Ish, and his ball handling is going to be just a necessity the next couple of games. And Richie, you asked me earlier, if there's any sort of like, if there's any way you can look at and try to find a silver lining from what happened over the weekend. Perhaps it's maybe Ish Smith finding a way back into the rotation too, as a guy that can take up some of those backup point guard minutes that have been going almost exclusively to Terry Rozier, you know, for the last month or so.
Yeah, I thought of that. I thought of that as we were just speaking right now, that he is the one guy that could work himself back into the rotation with his play over the next handful of games. We do have one more speaker request here from Brody, who's an active member in our Slack. Brody, what's your thought?
Hey guys, big fan. My question is actually about PJ Washington. Like Brian, I'm a big PJ Washington fan, and I feel like one of the things that makes him super valuable is just like how wide his skill set is. I mean, he's kind of an undersized five that can switch between the four and the five. But with how deep the Hornets forward rotation is right now, with like Miles being the starter, Gordon getting some backup minutes, Jalen getting minutes here and there. My question is, how do you think, provided PJ keeps getting better because he's such a young player, if he keeps getting better and more valuable and kind of earns a bigger part of the rotation, how does the team integrate him more? Because it doesn't seem like they wanted to be the starting center. It seems like they want somebody a little bigger, stronger, maybe more of a vertical spacer. So do you think he's just kind of destined to be the backup five? Or
yeah. It feels like he's almost playing exclusively five now, Brian. There's not many lineups.
Just real quickly, I mentioned this a pod a couple weeks ago, but he's basically been like over 90% of his minutes this season have been center, and it's probably close to 100 at this point now. He's playing very little. He's playing like none with Plumlee. You know what I mean?
Right.
And sorry to interrupt, Richie. My apologies.
No. I mean that's kind of what I was getting at. I don't know if Borrego kind of views this guy as a four anymore. It's almost like they're using him as the backup center. One, because there's not a good backup center to have to begin with. Richards, I guess, but again, Richards is only playing a handful of minutes a night, and even when he is playing without Plumlee, he's only getting the ceremonial start and playing for 7 minutes like he did tonight. So in terms of integrating him more and getting more minutes, it would have to be using him as the four more often. But I just don't know if Borrego views that as advantageous for him. They like the spacing that he does bring. He's going to play with Miles as the five and Miles as the four, or maybe without Miles and just play strictly the five there. I would love to know, I guess if he doesn't play with Plumlee that much, I would doubt that there's been a lineup this year, and maybe I'm wrong, with Miles at the three, PJ at the four, and Plumlee at the five. I'll have to look that up.
Yeah, I think, again, I looked this up. I can't remember if I did this with Lee or with Spencer, but PJ was hurt, I think, while I looked this up. So I'm guessing it hasn't changed much, if any, since then. But it was like he had played, I think, 10 minutes all season total with Plumlee. And I don't know, like, what percentage of those minutes that Miles was also on the court for, probably not many, but it's such a small sample either way. As far as like optimizing PJ, I think that's one of the real, like, that's one of the million-dollar questions facing the team right now, right? Like, outside of anything, you know, wherever LaMelo's development is going to go, I mean, I think that's sort of like the most important thing. You know, the development of Bridges is right there as like the next thing, I guess. But what the long term, what the intermediate and then long term plans are with PJ. I would love to know, like, what inside the franchise, what they're thinking. Cause right now, the way you're using him works for sure. Mm-hmm. Right. Like, he's so playable in so many different lineups. He's basically been a full-time five, but you know, he can flip around and play the four. With his ability to switch and with Charlotte's, you know, willingness to play zone, you know, sometimes it feels weird to even box him into a position, right? Because even when he's playing, you know, he and Bridges are in at the de facto 4-5, you know, Miles is the one that's inside a lot, right? Like, he's the one screening and diving to the rim, PJ spacing in the corner, you know? So it's like you get to use those guys so interchangeably. Yeah, look, I'm sure PJ would like to long-term be a starter in the NBA. And I don't see Charlotte dialing in, you know, maybe this season, but long term, I don't know if I see them going all in on PJ as the center. And as we've discussed on this podcast plenty of times before, you know, if you want to fully optimize LaMelo, you know, you're probably going to need a lob guy at center, right? You know, you're going to need a Rashawn Holmes. You're going to need an Evan Mobley. You're going to need a Daniel Gafford. Like, these are different degrees of this archetype. You know, obviously Mobley sort of breaks all archetypes. He's his own thing. But eventually you're going to have a 6'11", 7-foot guy that can catch it above the rim to play with LaMelo. So you can really, like, unlock that spread pick and roll lob game. You know, PJ could still easily be a part of those teams because he's still going to play leverage minutes for you because he can switch, and he's a killer 3-point shooter that makes, for the most part, pretty good decisions on offense. So, but, you know, how do you get him to buy into that kind of role? How does it work out financially? I think that's maybe tougher to sort of figure out. But for right now, I mean, he really is, I think, one of the more intriguing young big guys in the league, because of his ability to guard every position and because of that 3-point shooting. Obviously he's elite from the corners and has been since he stepped in the NBA, but he's been so good from above the break recently. Like, just, I mean, on fire from above the break since he came back from injury. And what that does for Charlotte's offense is huge. And the lineup that since we're just talking a lot about lineups, the lineup that, and I've mentioned this already on a previous recording, but the lineup that I would love to see more of, and we're going to have to wait on that, is I'd love to see more LaMelo, Rozier, Hayward, Bridges, and PJ. I think defensively that lineup is obviously, there's some concern, but offensively that's a killer lineup. And I think that's one that you're going to see hopefully a lot, you know, back half of the season and maybe even into the playoffs if Charlotte is so lucky to get there. So, long-term, I don't even know, like, PJ Washington's going to be a very good, very productive player in the NBA for a long, long time. He's a winning player. He can be on the court in a postseason scenario for all the reasons we just outlined. But it is hard to figure out exactly how that figures into where Charlotte wants to be 5 years from now. Because he can certainly be a part of it. I don't know how you get, if that's point B and we're at point A, I don't know how you get from A to B, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, I think the personnel right now with the roster kind of forces Borrego to play him at the five. Like, we haven't seen Plumlee and PJ play that much, and I wonder how that would turn out in terms of their offensive efficiency and their defensive efficiency and just how those two would pair together. I guess Borrego doesn't view them as a pairing that would work, and I guess we'll never know if we don't see it enough on the court. Last thing I'll mention before we wrap here, Brian, and if you have any last thoughts here on this game or just kind of like the implications of the four players being out. You know, one thing that we did see in this game and one thing that you're obviously going to see moving forward are lineups out there with no true point guards when Ish sits. LaMelo being out, like I said, this is going to be a thing and somewhat expected. I think Cody Martin was out there as the nominal point guard, but we saw a couple of possessions where Gordon Hayward was the guy taking the ball up the court, being a playmaker, and he's very capable of doing that. You have Miles Bridges, who in the fourth quarter, like, that was the biggest story of tonight, was him in the fourth quarter just being that guy that you went to He was consistent all night, but when the team needed it the most, he came through, and his pull-up shooting in that fourth quarter was just on point. The shot that he created for himself, like with a minute left to play, was awesome. Definitely next level stuff.
Yeah.
You know, that's been so good for him this season and even a little bit of last season. It's taken a bigger jump this season, but it just shows that his hard work is paying off. The thing is with Miles, he's always had the athleticism. Like, he's always been physically gifted. He just needed to put it all together on both ends of the court. And he's making so many strides that it's going to make this upcoming offseason pretty interesting with this free agency. I know some people are probably wondering why an extension wasn't given to him prior to the start of the season. And that's something that we can debate all season. I don't really want to have the conversation again about that, but it's going to be interesting to see how his play propels him towards free agency. But yeah, his self-creation is going to be needed in these next couple of games here, because you are going to have lineups where Ish is sitting and obviously LaMelo's out.
Yeah, the shot you're talking about that he hit, I think you tweeted it out. It was like a minute and five left in the game. And it's just like that guy, like that kind of like in mid game, like mid range, middle ground game, off the dribble with Bridges, like that is kind of been like the missing piece so far. Like, you know what I mean? Like the 18-foot sort of step back. Like, that's a shot that he looks, that's the next piece, I guess, for him, because it's where I think he looks sort of like most rigid with the basketball. He's trying to like create space and separate one-on-one in that in-between area. Like, he'd rather either be shooting a step back from, you know, 24 feet, or he'd rather be like going, you know, downhill like a freight train. So, you know, if he can figure out that kind of stuff, man, it just adds another, it would add another dimension for him as like a, you know, the power wing that you're building this up around next to LaMelo Ball. You touched on, you know, lineups that don't have a true point guard out there, but obviously with Bridges and PJ and Hayward, you've got those guys are, you know, three, they're all like they move in Charlotte's lineups between like the three and the five essentially, but they can certainly pass and create. But the lineup with Bridges, Cody Martin, PJ Washington, James Booknight, and Hayward, 5 minutes, 37 seconds tonight. That lineup was plus 11. Charlotte's best lineup tonight, which played 13 and a half minutes together, was Oubre, Bridges, Cody Martin, PJ, and Ish Smith. That lineup was plus 14. And yeah, those 13.
How does that work out when Oubre was negative 16 on the night? That's crazy.
I don't, it's weird, man, because like I'm looking at the NBA, like the NBA.com box score, and it's saying Kelly Oubre minus 16, but that lineup that I'm referring to, that's from PBP stats.
Yeah. PBP.
But yeah, that does look, I mean, it's hard to fathom. I'm not entirely sure, but it looks like, you know, Kelly was a part of,
like, the best
he was on another lineup with Bridges, Richards, Hayward, and Ish that went minus 8 in 7.5 minutes. And then Oubre, Bridges, PJ, Hayward, and Ish Smith played 5 minutes. That lineup was minus 9. So I'm guessing those lineups are sort of how you get to Oubre at such a sort of like a really weird minus 16. Despite the fact that he like hit a ton of threes and played 39 minutes in this game. Charlotte won by 3. So that, I mean, yeah, single game plus minus can be noisy, to say the least. And we're sort of just hinting on that, I guess. And then, yeah, just like with Bridges, I mean, like, we don't need to rehash the extension stuff, but I do kind of think the fact that he is playing this well speaks to why they didn't get an extension done this summer, like or this past summer. It's like, you know, he was playing so well down the final 2 months of the season. Charlotte was, you know, trying to see if they could, Charlotte probably wanted to know if that was for real to an extent, you know, can he do this, you know, extrapolate this out over the course of a full 82 game season plus playoffs, and maybe trying to hedge against that a little bit and see if you can get some kind of a discount. And for a guy like Bridges, a clutch sports client, of course they wouldn't go for that. So I do think like, the reasons why that extension didn't get done, you're so almost sort of seeing it play out now, the flip side of that is that now that Charlotte has seen him play like this for, you know, at least half a season and hopefully for the rest of the season, well, then you feel pretty good about signing him to a, you know, a big ass extension, this summer. And you don't even hesitate to do it. So yeah, big game for Charlotte, big win for Charlotte. I kind of can't believe they got it done on the road. And, the next couple of games are going to be tough. You get a rested Sixers team. You got to play them on the second night of a back-to-back while you're missing a big chunk of your team. And then you play them again on Wednesday as well. So that's a tough back-to-back for Charlotte with such a depleted roster at the moment. And the thought of matching up with Philadelphia without some of these pieces right now is like a pretty daunting mental exercise.
Do you think Nick Richards plays more than 7 minutes tomorrow?
I think he's got to as well.
I think he has to.
I do think it's one of those things too, where like if the first quarter goes ugly tomorrow night, like let's play Kai Jones 30 minutes.
Scotty Lewis, yeah.
You played so many of these guys huge minutes tonight. On the first night of a back-to-back. So I'm sure that already right now, like as we're doing this, they are doing, a variety of extensive kind of like recovery, methods to get those guys fit and ready to play again in less than 24 hours in Uptown. But got to be careful with that, especially with someone like Hayward who played 33 minutes tonight with a ton of usage and defensive responsibility. So I will be mindful of the minutes as they get ready to play Philadelphia. And yeah, I think for sure you're going to need to see Richard's probably going to foul out pretty quickly too, but
that's fine. Provided
that he's able to, pick up fewer than 6 fouls in 7 minutes and 28 seconds. Well then, yes, I think he'll play. I think he'll play more tomorrow night against Philly.
This news, like I said at the top of the podcast, like it just came at the worst time because it felt like everyone was rested and rejuvenated, and now it kind of depletes the energy and the stamina. And I'm glad that the Hornets played, their top players a lot of minutes tonight and they picked up the win. I think it would have been a different story if they played a lot of minutes and they ended up losing the game. Hornets now at 14-11, Hawks dropped to 12-12 with this loss tonight against the Hornets. Miles Bridges was the leading scorer with 32 points. And like Brian mentioned, the Hornets have 2 games against the Philadelphia 76ers. The 76ers are rested. I have this odd feeling that this like random player is going to go off tomorrow night, like Niang, for whatever reason. He's going to go off tomorrow night.
He's been good this year, man.
He would
make sense as like the random guy to get hot and just, hit 5 threes or whatever against the Hornets. And like, look, the win tonight, I know it's just December 5th, but you beat Atlanta and now you've got these 2 games against Philadelphia. If you could pick up at least 1 against Philly, these things kind of matter for playoff seating and stuff like that right now, right? Like there's so many teams in the East that are bunched up in this area from 6 to 12 almost. And then there's a huge drop down to Indiana after that. But so this was a big win against Atlanta on the road, make no mistake. And yeah, I guess the hope would be if you could just somehow split with Philadelphia these next 2 games. Mm-hmm. And that's kind of why I do think like if stuff starts to stink early tomorrow night, I mean, I don't think they'll actually do this, but I think it's something they should consider is like, you don't want to, it's not like you're going to like throw a game or anything like that, but just get some of the young guys more of a rep, some reps, and then try to get some rest in, use the day off on Tuesday, and then, get back to work against Philadelphia again.
Thanks again for everyone for tuning in here on Twitter Spaces. We appreciate the speaker request. If you tuned in late and you want to hear the full conversation, the podcast will be out tomorrow morning. For Brian, I'm Richie. We'll talk to you guys later.
The most unlikely of victories for the Hornets, playing 4 men down in Atlanta. The Hornets get it done.